Certainly. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star two if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. And we do have a question. It comes from the line of Patricia Pagnotta from Orlando. Please go ahead.
Hi. That was a great presentation. Thank you so much. And you've touched on so many different things, so I really appreciate that. But I had a question about the study that you did. Did you find any correlation with persons in aging deciding to come off of disease-modifying therapy? Either they wanted to come off or their providers wanted them to come off?
Well, I'll tell you, in my study, I looked at adherence to disease-modifying therapies, and I looked at if they were on a disease-modifying therapy. I didn't look at whether or not they were coming on or off, but there weren't as many on as I would have thought. I would say at least 60% were not on any disease-modifying therapy, at least 60%. And my sample of patients came from four MS centers. Two were in a private practice and two were academic health centers. So I think if my sample came more from a general population, it would have been different, probably more people not on medication. So I had about 40% on, and most of them, hard to believe, very adherent. And if they came off, they would have come off because their healthcare provider said it wasn't working for them anymore. But most of them who were on were very adherent.
And did any, you said that the EDSS was relatively low, but any thought as to how many were in which stage of MS, like of that 60% that weren't on therapy, how many of those may have still been remitting, relapsing?
Well, I have to say that's a great question. In the study that I had, everybody thought they were relapsing, remitting. All the patients did. Because they want to be relapsing, remitting.
Right.
But when we went to the charts, it was totally different. Probably three-quarters were, at least three-quarters were secondary progressive. A few of them were relapsing progressive, and a few were primary. But almost every patient said that they were relapsing, remitting, even at age 65, with the disease for 45 years. So it was pretty funny.
Great. Well, thank you so much again for the presentation. Very
thank
nice.
You.
So Mary Jean, why do you think they were more adherent? Because they were older? You know,
yeah,
because they
I
had
think
lived
so.
With it a longer period of time?
I think so, because they know, okay, I have to be on medicine. Big deal. You know, my friend is a diabetic. She takes shots all the time. Now, when we try to compare that, when we look at a younger patient and have them take an injection or whatever they're going to take, they're young and they're feeling odd. They're different. But as they get older, you know, no, everybody's taking something. And everybody has to go through their issues. And so they're very, very adherent. And the only reason they are not adherent is because they forget, not because they don't want to take it anymore. Oh, no, they want to take it.
I see that, yeah.
They want to take
forgetting.
It. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, you had also brought up, you were talking about mobility issues, which
mm-hmm.
I think that this age group, you know, at a certain period of time, such a large percentage of the patients do deal with mobility issues. Do you find that it's common for them to have, you know, multiple mobility devices to use, kind of depending on how they feel? Or do you think that maybe some of these patients just, you know, stick with one thing? How does that develop over time, I guess, as far as needing those things?
I think if you don't need to be in the wheelchair, then you're not. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
and no matter who that is, they're going to fight that because they don't want to be in a wheelchair. However, should you use a cane or a walker? Now, those are big issues. And even as people age, they don't want to look more immobile. They still don't want to use the cane. They don't want to they don't want to use the walker because they
so
don't want anybody
finding,
to know.
You're finding a lot more resistance.
There's still some resistance. And my biggest fear is falls. I mean, if a patient falls, in the house and breaks a hip or and you know how many oftentimes patients fall. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And as they age and they're much less able to take care of themselves, one of the biggest fears is if you fall and you get hurt, you probably will not be independent anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so most elderly people in general don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear, oh, you better not fall or you won't be independent. And as a matter of fact, one of my doctoral students did a study on that. What do you want to hear? And they only wanted to hear how to live healthy. They didn't
right.
want to hear remove the rugs,
mm-hmm.
don't trip, you know, all the stuff that we say. That didn't matter to them.
Yeah,
they
did want to maintain their independence.
They wanted to maintain it, but they were afraid of what you were saying, so they tuned you out. So if they get frightened of, oh, my gosh, I'm going to lose my independence, they're not going to listen. So my biggest issue, as I said, with mobility is falls, and I do encourage them to very strongly use your device, whatever it is. It's there to help you. And
so are you pretty readily to send a physical therapist into the home to look for safety issues?
If they can get that, that's a great thing.
Is
you know,
it
but
difficult?
It's difficult, yeah. I mean, you know, if you only have Medicare, you can't get that unless you've just been hospitalized.
Okay, so they can't do a home health, home safety evaluation?
I don't think so.
No?
Not in my region. Not in my region, perhaps in other people's region. They can't, physical therapy, you can't get a nurse in there. You can't get anybody in there unless you pay for it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which a physical therapist to come in and look at your house and give you, it's probably in my region between $80 and $100.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
That's pricey if you have financial problems.
That is. You know, I like what you talked about when you were talking about the chronic diseases, how it accelerates aging.
Yes.
Because that's something that I just really didn't think much about, you know, I mean, we've been dealing with this chronic disease, but not really in the aspect of how it actually accelerates it.
Well, it's interesting
the
because...
the slower learning rate and the response time.
But you know how it accelerates aging, and I think everybody, if you know, you could relate to this,
mm-hmm.
it's the chronic stress on the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you have chronic stress, which accelerates aging. So it's, you know, having a disease like MS, it's an inflammatory disease, and it's a chronic disease, and it's very stressful for your body. So, you know, if you have diabetes, it causes chronic stress. If you have MS for many years, it's chronic stress. So that's what causes earlier aging. So instead of, like, at 60, maybe feeling, you know, okay, you know, 60 is the new 50 or something, you feel maybe 70. You have more fatigue. You have more problems, more perhaps cognitive issues. And that can really easily occur because of chronic stress. And once you have chronic stress from one disease, it's not hard to get another disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who are sick more easily get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an issue. That's an issue for
well,
us.
Well, and you brought up how starting slow, go slow, you know, especially with this age group because of the decreased renal function. I mean, these are things that we as nurses, MS nurses, need to think about, you know, when we're doing symptom management
right.
with our patients.
Right.
As far as that's concerned. I do have another question, and, you know, maybe you know more about it than I do because you're more... you've been more affiliated with the university than I have. But gerontological rehabilitation nurses,
mm-hmm.
that seems to be a whole new and growing area of
mm-hmm.
nursing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it
is it
can
because
be.
Of the baby boomer?
Yeah, because,
you know,
everybody's
because
getting old.
Increasing.
We're all getting old. You know, that's one reason. And the other thing is, I mean, who's going to be around to take care of us? And you hope that there will be people with knowledge in gerontology. Now, what the American College of Nurse Practitioners has done recently is make one, instead of just a geriatric nurse practitioner,
uh-huh.
they've made it adult geriatric. Adult/geri. So
what's
people
the
will be
positive
trained
aspect about that? I mean, well, as far as explain that.
Yeah. So as an adult nurse practitioner, which I've been for many, many years, I was trained to take care of anybody from the age of 18 and up. But now we're making sure, and so the content that I received and the content that I've taught all these years has some elder content in it, but not as much as they've changed it now to be. So probably 50% of the content will be on geriatrics, because we're desperately in need of learning more and how to treat patients who are older with many diseases and who are living for a very long time.
It's so much more complex.
It is so much more complex. And with MS, oh my gosh, if you think about taking care of an older patient, mm-hmm. not only do they have MS, but they may have diabetes, they may have respiratory problems, they may have asthma, they may have some kind of cardiac issue, mm-hmm. and everything affects each other. And the other thing that I wanted to remind everybody is that many of our patients use us as their primary care.
I know. Sometimes that's an issue.
That is so hard, because especially for elderly patients, I mean, I don't know a lot about, say, cardiology or something, or I can't mm-hmm. pick up a murmur or if they're having chest pain. I, honest to God, this happened to me. 72-year-old woman came into my office, and she used to come in every week to get her Avonex shot, and she came into my office and said to me, you know, she wasn't feeling good that morning. I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, you know, I have that MS hug. I said, what's that MS hug? And she said, you know, that pain around your chest that you get, the MS hug. I said, have you had it before? And she said, yeah, I had it about 5 years ago, and I was worked up for all sorts of cardiac stuff, but it was nothing. Now she's 72. So I said, let me take your blood pressure. So I took her blood pressure. It was like 220 over 110. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, who's your primary? So she gave me the number, and I called the primary, and I said, look, she's complaining of this MS hug. Her blood pressure is high. Her pulse is 98. I'm quite concerned that she might be having some other issue. And he said, okay. So I said, I'm sending her right to the hospital. So she would not let me get an ambulance. She mm-hmm. drove herself. She said, I'll meet him there. She drove herself to the hospital, and the next day she had a quadruple bypass.
Oh, wow.
But she was thinking it was MS. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's that MS hug.
Well, and I think a lot of patients do. I mean, you know, sometimes it's hard to differentiate, and you always kind of say, okay, well, it's probably the MS. You know, we have another question in queue, so we'll let Manny open that up.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question is from line of Mary Stevens from Canton. Please go ahead.
Hi. Enjoyed your presentation quite a bit. My main question was about those changes that are usually needed for medications as MS patients age. I'll let you answer that. But then I also have some input from a different perspective, because I also am 60 years old and have MS, as well as being an MS nurse and I work in acute rehabilitation.
Oh, wow.
So,
so you could say a lot.
I'm not covered at all.
Yes. So what was your question? You wanted to know about changes in medication?
Yeah. When do you find that people that maybe have been on something like gabapentin long-term need adjustments in their dosages as they age?
As in up or down?
As in down, because of... you know, clearance of drugs, and
that may very well happen. And they may need adjustment going down. And when you add something, say that person now needs baclofen too, that may compound what the gabapentin was doing. So if the gabapentin was making her a little tired, now she has baclofen added to it, she'll be very tired. And so you really have to be careful about titrating each drug to how the person feels. Because the more fatigued a patient over 60 gets, if they have mobility problems, the more likely they are to fall, which will cause numerous issues. So we have to be very careful titrating drugs when we're adding new ones and taking very good care. I mean, if you're going to add something, you should, as I say, doesn't matter what drug it is, start low, go slow, because they may not be able to tolerate it as well as a young person would. if they get diarrhea, if they get constipation, if they get increased problems, it's always an issue. It really is. So yes, I would say if you're adding something, or if the patient all of a sudden starts complaining of something new, look at, first of all, I would do some blood work to see how their kidney function is and how their liver function is, just to make sure everything is okay. And then I would definitely go very slow and maybe start decreasing things if that's possible.
I'm thinking even of the patient that's been on, you know, a combination that has a lot of spasticity, but it's been well controlled on a dose, but now they're getting older and all of a sudden they're tired and they're
yeah.
saying, but I am getting older and maybe it's worth trying to back off on, you know, just a little bit.
And you're absolutely right, because you can always go down, you know,
right.
You can always go down and see how they do. And if you go down, you just go down slowly. You build up slowly, and you go down slowly, and see how people tolerate it, how our patients tolerate it. But you're right; the kidney function changes, the liver function may change, and you know, they are absorbing differently now as they age. It doesn't matter if they've been on it for 50 years; things are changing now. So I totally agree with you. That was a great question.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now, if somebody else is waiting, I'll, you know.
Do you have another question?
Wait,
you go right ahead.
I had a couple of comments for things that have been talked about along the
sure.
way with people thinking that they're relapsing, remitting. And in my experience with a lot of people of various ages with MS, because I participate in internet groups and that type of thing as a patient,
mm-hmm.
and so I hear... You know, I'm just a patient there. Nobody knows what I am otherwise.
Right.
And so they're very open with their comments about the healthcare professionals and why they do things and, you know, a whole bunches of things. But they, I think a lot of people indicate that they don't, doctors don't freely share with them what's, stage or type of MS they have
mm-hmm.
Very often, and that a lot of that might be because they feel that the insurance won't cover the modifiers if they say that they're secondary progressive,
huh.
and that and so that they'll lose that therapy, and that they are pretty compliant because of, you know, I was impressed with the disability scores, and that if they're that low and people have been taking a modifier long term, then it's easy to say, well, it's working, it's what's keeping me this good. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think especially people that have to contribute to the cost of those, it's kind of like, you know, the kid that pays for their own education at school.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And
advantage of that opportunity more than when it's paid for them completely.
Well, and I agree. I think a lot of the diagnosis itself has to do, you know, that's an insurance issue. Okay?
Right.
If that physician feels that the patient would benefit from a disease-modifying agent, why shouldn't that patient necessarily be on it? And do you want to really, you know, cut any chances of them having the opportunity to do that?
Right.
So that's why I think I can understand, because patients do come, and I know some of them are confused. They're not sure exactly what type of MS that they have. But I guess when it really comes down to it, is that in itself, is that important to the patients? Or is it more important that they feel that their total care and their treatment is in good hands with the healthcare provider that they're working with?
Yeah,
so I guess that's a question.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that most people don't talk about what kind of MS the patient may have, because it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really doesn't matter. We do talk about if you're progressing, but we never really say, oh, you have become progressive, unless the patient asks.
Mm-hmm.
And our concern is, are you going to progress? Let's do everything we can to keep you as stable as we can. So I think
and
you're right.
keep your options open.
Yeah.
Keep all those options open.
Yeah.
If you can.
And you know, when we bill just MS. However, when we have to send chart notes, they may want something more specific. And you're absolutely right. So it's probably just better to leave it as vague as you can with your diagnosis so that the patient can have their options.
Right.
You know, I totally agree with you. It's a great question.
And the other thing that I found sometimes helpful with assistive aids is to, you know, rather than, especially if somebody's resistant to the thing about, you know, I don't want you to fall or that type of thing, but I try to emphasize how much further, and I can make this personal, that, you know, and because I do have at my disposal a wheelchair, a walker, a cane, you know, all the different assistive devices, depending on where I'm going and what I need.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found that, you know, if I want to get out and around, I can do so much more if I have a walker.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Definitely. You can go further and yeah.
And that's a good thing. You know, if you're telling a 35-year-old that, they don't like that. But if you're telling a 65-year-old person that they can go further and move further, they might not be they may not feel the same. They might feel, oh yeah, you're right. That's a great idea. You know,
yeah,
that's
it's good for younger people too, because when they have kids and they want to be part of their kids' activities,
yeah.
They're afraid that if the kids don't want them seen in a wheelchair or with a walker, and you point out that it can make the difference between them actually being there or not.
Yeah, yeah.
It can make a huge difference, but
yeah.
And people don't realize until they use a device how much easier it makes it, because maintaining balance without those things is a huge energy drain.
Mary, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Mary Jean had talked about resilience, okay, and the need to cope with your age-related changes in life, okay, and it's so important, she said, especially with the aging process. Is there something we can instill in our patients early on in the disease that the focus of picking yourself up and just keep going and moving on? Is there anything that, you know, we could do in the nursing profession to help our patients cope and understand that resiliency is a part of a successful treatment or part of it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it's a hard thing because there's so many factors, and I just I think that sometimes people get too much focused in on, you know, what's wrong, and they think that what's happening today, it's only going to get worse from here, and they get that mindset. But with MS, we're kind of fortunate in that what's there today could improve. You know, we could see some improvements because there's so many ups and downs, and you get too hot and things get bad, or, you know, but they can, you know,
because you have so many varying symptoms from day to day. And
but I enjoy winter. You know, everybody else is looking forward to the summer.
Yeah, and you like the winter.
Well, you know, there was an article in the International Journal of International MS Journal just in 2011 about resilience. And one of the things, and it's actually called Finding Quality of Life Despite Multiple Sclerosis, and I looked at this article earlier, and one of the things this woman wrote about was, teaching the patient, in other words, once again, social support, having like a member of a faith community, that seems to foster resilience in a lot of people. You know, they go to church, they go to temple, they go to whatever they do, a member of a faith community. It provides meaning, and anything that can provide meaning, having positive role models. They say the healthcare provider should facilitate positive role modeling. You know, it's us. We should say, we should be hopeful. We should, be a positive role model for our patients and give them hope. And, you know, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well, I think that's part of being an advocate, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that is so important. Our local MS chapter has people that go and visit MS patients that are, you know, don't get the opportunity to leave their homes, so at least they get some socialization. You know, we have lots of local churches that will come and get people, even if they have limited mobility, so that they can attend their church services. Or
they
go and have church services at, you know, the nursing facilities and that type of thing, so that the people can keep some kind of contact. And, you know, if when people can get around, if they can talk to other people that have MS, it just is so helpful, whether that's online. It's, I think sometimes really takes a voice contact, but there's, you know, there's things that only another person with MS would be able to answer.
Right. Well, the support groups, I think, are extremely important. I think they're also can be very supportive to the families, to the caregivers, you know, to the whole unit. And I think having the computer, you know, this technology age also really helps, because it can keep, people can, even if they are somewhat homebound, can keep in touch through the computer.
Yeah,
you know,
they can. And you know, if we can help them find good sources.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
That they can rely on rather than just anything they might come up with.
That's a very big,
well,
big thing.
You know, we have a whole list, and we had one before. We have one in our office that we do hand out to patients of websites.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost approved websites, you know, that we feel, you know, would be very beneficial. And these are the websites that have validated good information, you know, for our MS patients.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did have, I know Brant Oliver, and he is actually going to be talking next month. He had provided us, and we had put it on the website last year, and we could probably do it again this year, is a whole list of websites. Part of it was nursing resources, you know, for the nurses,
mm-hmm.
and it was also resources for the patients.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something that we can possibly list again.
And the other thing that I want to also leave you with is, as patients get older, doesn't mean that they're not as important as a younger patient who's newly diagnosed. They still want the latest and the greatest.
Maybe.
They still want to be treated like, you know, they're just as important, and that if there's something for them. I had so many patients, they were so willing to join my study, and then they say to me, is there anything for me?
Uh-huh.
I will join anything. Is there any study? Is there anything? Because I will do anything to be involved in the future of MS and finding, you know, cures or ideas or whatever.
We're usually excluded.
Yeah.
Studies, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, I think they're very responsive and very open to the research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're willing. This is their opportunity to give, to
right.
give back.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
To make a difference, their mm-hmm. opportunity to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
So
I thank you. So much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you,
know,
Mary, for calling in.
The work thing is also really good, because I know at least four other people with MS that are in mid-50s to into their 60s that are still working at least some hours. And
yeah, it makes a huge
great.
Difference.
That's great.
Makes a
it's
huge
a lifesaver
difference.
For, you know, your mental health and your finances.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
It is for both. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you
for calling in. And thank you, Mary Jean. Oh. I think our time is just about ended here, but excellent conversation. You just brought up some wonderful points, and my mind just keeps going in circles and things about things that we need to keep in mind as working with our older patients as they're aging, things that change. So on behalf of the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions, I do want to thank Mary Jean. I want to thank you, Mary Jean, for your wonderful presentation, and to Novartis for supporting these programs through their unrestricted educational grant. Okay, so next month we will be having Brant Oliver. He'll be presenting depression and coping strategies in MS. So I hope that you will all phone in and listen and participate if you have any questions with that. So I'm going to say thank you again for joining us
this evening.
And this concludes tonight's meeting. I hope you all have a good night.
Good night.
Night.